From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Last night, Democratic frontrunner John Kerry added Hawaii, Idaho, and Utah to his list of primary wins. That makes 18 of 20. With his big lead, Kerry has drawn fire from fellow Democrats for trying to play all sides on the issues. This week, President Bush joined the fray. In a speech at a Republican Governors Association fundraiser, Bush said the Democratic field is an interesting group with diverse opinions.
For NAFTA and against NAFTA. For the Patriot Act and against the Patriot Act. In favor of liberating Iraq and opposed to it. And that's just one senator from Massachusetts.
After 19 years as junior senator from Massachusetts, John Kerry has a long record to poke at. Opponents say his positions on gay marriage, the Patriot Act, No Child Left Behind, and especially Gulf Wars 1 and 2 have swayed with the political winds. The Kerry camp defends his flexibility and says the GOP line of attack is a smear. Tonight on Point, Senator John Kerry and the flip-flop charge. We'll go first to Washington, where Republican National Committee Chair Ed Gillespie took the charges of flip-flopping to Kerry today and assailed Kerry's record on national defense, perceived to be President Bush's strong suit. Former Georgia Senator Max Cleland and Representative Norman Dix of Washington State responded to Gillespie's charges, defending Kerry. Richard Wolf, Newsweek magazine correspondent, has been following the Kerry campaign. He joins us now from Washington. Good evening and welcome, Richard Wolf.
Good evening. Good to be with you again.
It's great to have you. So give us the back and forth today. Ed Gillespie came out swinging, and the Kerry campaign, through Cleland and Norman Dix, counterattacked. Is that right?
He did. You know, even before the Democratic nomination is locked up, we have a general election slugfest going on. Ed Gillespie at the RNC came out, accompanied by a stack of congressional records, just to illustrate how much they've got to mine here in Senator Kerry's record. And he accused John Kerry of overreacting, of getting all breathless about questioning his patriotism, and delved into some of these votes that he's had on various weapons programs, saying basically John Kerry voted to undermine America's armed forces. Now, as you say, Max Cleland and Norm Dix came back and said, ugly politics, this is all about questioning a war hero's patriotism. And really, this is kind of gloves-off season, and we're only in February.
Just beginning, and it's already getting tough. Richard Wolf, what's your assessment? How hard-hitting is this theme of the flip-flop and John Kerry?
Well, I think Senator Kerry's voting record is a huge mine for the Republicans to dig into. You can take anybody's voting record and portray them as being contradictory, not knowing which direction they want to go in. That's very easy, particularly with a senator who has such a long record. On the other hand, both sides are plunging into this fight way too early. I think one of the most revealing things we heard today was from Ed Gillespie, who, when asked, don't you think the voters are going to be tired of this come the fall? And he said, yes, and I'm going to be tired of it too. I think there's a danger here that both sides beat each other into submission and it becomes a zero-sum game.
Did John Kerry's Democratic opponents on the primary trail, have they also raised the flip-flopping issue? We've seen quotes from some Dean people at least here. How lively an issue has this been? How has John Kerry himself responded to it when challenged with it?
They have raised it repeatedly, and Senator Kerry's response is that he tries to set it into some context. For a start, he says he won't take any lessons in national security from anyone. And that argument has pretty much held water right the way throughout here. It's certainly the line they're sticking to right now. Max Cleland, who is also a decorated Vietnam veteran, a triple amputee as well, is very eloquent on this subject, having felt it very personally in his fight for the Georgia Senate, which he lost. So, you know, this is a very passionate debate, and passion has so far won the day. Generally, people attacking John Kerry have not succeeded in the Democratic race.
So far, but now we're heading in, as you say, to the big time. Some people worried on the Republican side that the attacks may come too soon. But even before this race, Richard Wolf, John Kerry has had a kind of reputation, even among his Democratic colleagues, has he not, for kind of working the angles?
Absolutely. That's true. That's been a longstanding criticism of him. You know, the positive spin that the Kerry campaign puts out is that John Kerry has changed his mind along with the country. He supported the Vietnam war when he was out there. He obviously opposed it when he came back. He reflected the mood of the nation. The same is true, he says, of things like the war in Iraq. He was ambivalent about it. He backed the commander-in-chief, President Bush, and then realized he was duped in some way. I'm afraid it is an open goal here for the Republicans to drive through. It's very hard for them to say that he's been consistent, and that, I'm afraid, is one of the strengths for President Bush. People do rate him very highly in terms of, even now, in terms of being consistent.
Right or wrong, consistent. Richard Wolff, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Richard Wolff is covering the Kerry campaign for Newsweek magazine. He joined us from Washington. We are talking tonight about the GOP's opening salvo against John Kerry, that the senator is a flip-flopper. Is the Bush team on to something here? Does it wash? Will it hurt Kerry? And who would you rather have in the White House, Bulldozer Bush or Complex John Kerry? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me tonight in the studio is Jeff Jacoby, nationally syndicated columnist with the Boston Globe and longtime John Kerry watcher. Great to have you, Jeff. Thanks for being here.
Good to be here.
Also with us is Elizabeth Sherman, research fellow at the Center for Public Leadership at Harvard University and a longtime Kerry watcher herself. Elizabeth, thanks for being in.
Thank you, Tom.
And with us in the studio tonight is On Point News analyst Jack Beattie, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Jack, great to have you right here.
Hello, Tom. Hello, guests.
Jeff Jacoby, you have delivered the bill of particulars. Share it with us. How do you look at the consistency or lack thereof in Senator John Kerry's record?
Well, I almost feel as though I should be collecting royalties from the Bush campaign. This is a theme that I've been hitting on for quite some time. I began a column a couple of weeks ago that sort of anticipated the way George Bush put it in that speech the other day. I wrote, in the 2004 presidential field, there is a candidate for nearly every point of view.
Right.
His name is John Kerry. And it seems to be true on issue after issue. You go through the list and you find John Kerry on side A and John Kerry on side B.
Take us down that list.
Well, so the ones that I mentioned just in the latest column, capital punishment for terrorists. Are you for that? John Kerry says he's for it. He announced December of 2002, I'm for the death penalty for terrorists because, and he gave his reasons. But if you're against the death penalty for terrorists, that's okay. John Kerry's against it as well. Voted against it three times. Whacked Governor Bill Weld of Massachusetts, who challenged him in the Senate race in 1996. He said no other country is going to extradite suspects, terrorist suspects to us if they're going to face the death penalty. It's just it's a get-out-of-jail-free card.
So there's one death penalty for terrorists, both sides, you say.
He voted for the Patriot Act, like every other member of the U.S. Senate except for Russ Feingold. It passed 99-1. At the time that he voted on it, he got up on the floor and made a floor statement, said he thought it worked out a nice compromise with the various civil liberties issues. He even wrote part of it. The language on money laundering was originally his work. Now he goes around and you'd think that it was something that was that came straight out of the Third Reich, and he vows to get rid of it. He calls it knock in the night type of police state activity. There's one. Same-sex marriage. I count at least four positions on same-sex marriage.
And here's a live wire in his own home state.
Absolutely.
Not to mention nationally.
He voted against DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, at the federal level in, I think it was 1998 when Congress passed that. One of only 14 senators who opposed it. He called it at the time a fundamentally ugly legislative gay bashing. So clearly then you'd think that he supports same-sex marriage, but no, he says he's against same-sex marriage. Said that he would not condemn a DOMA-type amendment to the Massachusetts Constitution.
So he's against same-sex marriage, but he has attacked President Bush for being for an amendment that would bar same-sex marriage.
Right, but that's only two of his hands. That was one hand, that was the other hand. Then on the other hand, he says he supports civil unions. Then on yet another hand, he says that his real position is that of Vice President Dick Cheney, who says that he's content to leave this up to the states and let each state come to its own decision.
And then there's war in the Persian Gulf, war with Iran.
War in 1991, he voted against it. He said at the time that this was going to lead to thousands of body bags coming home and more young American men being turned into amputees. He said, is the liberation of Kuwait so important that we need to rush into war at this time? And he attacked the first President Bush for being unilateral, a term that we've certainly heard a lot of now. Mm. Now, of course, he doesn't deny that he voted against it. He says his reason for voting against war in 91 is that he wanted to encourage the then President Bush to build a bigger domestic coalition. So in other words, he voted against it, but he was really for it. This time around, he voted for it.
This is in the fall of 2002. President Bush asked for the permission.
Having first denounced the current Bush administration for being in a rush to war with Iraq, he then voted for that war resolution that gave Bush the power to go to war as he saw fit, then said that there should be no war unless the United Nations approved. Then when Hans Blix made his statement to the Security Council, John Kerry said that he was convinced that this was clearly a proper bill of particulars. Saddam should be given a 30-day ultimatum and then face war. President Bush, a few days later, said just about the same thing in his State of the Union address a year ago. John Kerry denounced that State of the Union address. I think his words were reckless unilateralism. Any position you can imagine on any issue, John Kerry seems to be on just about all of them.
Okay, Jeff Jacoby, there's a good start. Elizabeth Sherman, here it is. Jeff Jacoby says it. Ed Gillespie says it. President Bush says it. And surely not for the last time. We are going to hear more of this. What do you make of this litany of Kerry flip-flops?
Boy, I think that really the Bush administration is grasping at straws. And I just think they are tremendously audacious to say that John Kerry has gone back and forth on, you know, what on his stand on national security. I mean, of course, this is the man, President Bush, who came out in his campaign in 2000 and said, one thing we will not do is to go into these ridiculous foreign, costly adventures and wars. We're going to have a humble foreign policy. We're not going to get involved in these outrageous things like nation building in Kosovo and Bosnia, and which are robbing the treasury of all this money. We're really going to concentrate on what's going on here. So then, of course, as we all know, his administration hypes this ridiculous story about weapons of mass destruction and a vast army that is going, you know, this tremendous capacity of the Iraq regime. I mean, they're going to be steaming up the Potomac any day now, and you know, completely destroying our country. And we know that they are very closely linked to 9/11, and you know, the fact that they were all Saudi Arabians has nothing
Never
to
mind
do with
that.
The fact. Never mind that. So, and not only that, but the fact is, the biggest problem that this nation is facing is that the top tax, the richest segment of our society, is just paying too damn much in taxes, and we have got to do something about it.
This is
what Bush said, and we're going to do something about it. And in fact, they did do something about it, and they decided that we will reduce the taxes on the richest segment of society, because that is really the most serious problem facing America. And not only that, but we will still, in fact, have a surplus, and we will be able to pay for all the domestic needs, and Social Security will be safe, and all of these problems in America can be addressed. But as long as we take this important step, which is help our millionaires, because they're just paying too darn much in taxes.
And it ain't so, you're saying. I hear you saying, hey, Bush also has his problem. He's got the egg on his face. I don't hear you saying that John Kerry didn't make the flip-flops that Jeff Jacoby described.
I think there's a big difference, Tom, between being a lifelong legislator and dealing with really tough calls in a legislative body with the information that is provided to you from the executive branch. Now, on the Iraq war, number one, there were a lot of people, myself included, who thought that this was ridiculous adventurism, who felt that the United States had really had the wrong policy in supporting Saddam Hussein for so many years, in allowing him to have weapons of mass destruction.
So you're going to call Bush on that? You're going to say
and
it was all wrong,
I think that on every single one of these things that Jeff has enumerated here, they were very tough calls, very close calls, and I think that John Kerry needs to stand up and be extremely proud of his record in the Senate, including his record on defense spending.
Jack Beatty, let me turn to you. We just got a minute before the break, but here's the Democratic counterattack. It's not exactly a refutation of the flip-flop charge.
No, and we've heard this before, of course. In 1932, the incumbent president, Herbert Hoover, said of Franklin Roosevelt, the governor of New York, that he was a chameleon on plaid.
Woo, that's a lot of chameleon.
For and against the League of Nations, for and against the bonus bill, for and against the Volstead Act, for and against the balanced budget. FDR won 472 electoral votes to Hoover's 55.
I don't think it's going to be quite that runaway this time.
Not quite that runaway.
That's a great piece of history.
But this charge of the Republicans, it seems to me, has more traction than their last one, which was that John Kerry led the Senate in special interests. In fact, he's 92 out of 100 over the last 15 years.
We'll come back and look at that. Jack Beatty, Jeff Jacoby, Elizabeth Sherman, stand by. We're talking tonight about Senator John Kerry and the flip-flop charge. Have you dug into John Kerry's record yet? Is he a flip-flopper? Is the GOP onto something here or not? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Democratic presidential frontrunner John Kerry and the flip-flop charge coming this week from President Bush and from the chair of the Republican National Committee, Ed Gillespie. My guests tonight are Jeff Jacoby, columnist for the Boston Globe, who has taken some pretty tough shots at John Kerry. Elizabeth Sherman is with us. She's a research fellow at the Center for Public Leadership at Harvard University, a frequent political commentator on Bloomberg Radio. And our own Jack Beatty is here. You can join us as well. Is the GOP onto something here? Will it hurt John Kerry? Does Kerry have the gusto to blow past this line of attack, or could it bring him down? Is this the biggest chink in the Kerry armor? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Is this what matters to you? Jeff Jacoby, you heard the response. Elizabeth Sherman says, hey, okay, you've got some stuff to tread out there,
right,
but
there's
bigger
right.
fish to fry here, and it's all about George Bush.
You know, I would agree with Elizabeth that anybody with a long record in politics is going to have all kinds of issues on which you can manage to find discrepancies. I would also agree that George W. Bush has certainly changed on some big ones. I give him credit for changing on the nation building. I think 9/11 changed a lot of people's minds about a lot of big things. One that she didn't mention, I'll just add to the anti-Bush pile here. He ran a campaign promising fiscal rectitude as United States president, and
yeah.
now we're running
Amen.
You know,
That's gone.
More spending and bigger deficits than ever. But let me try to broaden this so that it's not just a matter of gotcha on this one and gotcha on that one. When John Kerry announced for president, at least one of his announcements, he gave a speech down in South Carolina. And he used the word courage 10 times in that speech. That was the theme of that speech. I would say that when it comes to physical courage, the kind of courage that John Kerry showed on the battlefield, clearly he takes a backseat to no one. His physical courage, no one challenges.
He was there, the medal short. We all know the stories.
What I see in all of this flip-flopping, and my dossier before was just the beginning of a much longer list, what it says to me is that political courage isn't in the man. I cannot think of any issue on which John Kerry has stuck out his head, stuck out his neck, taken a politically unpopular and dangerous position, and stuck with it in the face of all comers. A couple of times he's seemed to take a politically unpopular stand for a Democrat. He once made a speech in which he raised some questions about affirmative action, for example. But as soon as the heat was turned up, he quickly scurried back into the gopher hole and never said another word about it. And that also, it seems to me, has been a hallmark of his career. So it's the lack of political courage. And I think that if the Republicans are going to try to make this an issue that will have legs for the rest of the campaign, perhaps that's the way in which they should be framing it.
Elizabeth Sherman, is that it? Look at John Kerry's record for a minute. We've got your take on George Bush, but what about the senator himself? Is it a profile in courage?
Oh, absolutely a profile in courage. First of all, I would really disagree with this categorization of physical courage. I mean, when someone is in a war situation and you risk your own life, that takes moral fortitude. Absolutely, to put yourself in the line of fire on behalf of your comrade.
Does it necessarily translate to the Senate floor?
I think it's a reflection of his character, and I think that's what's being debated here, his character. He dissembles? I don't think so. I think that as a legislator, he has had to weigh a lot of considerations, including the desires of his constituents, the citizens of Massachusetts. And I know that that has often influenced how he has voted and how he has spoken out on certain issues. And also, I think that another way of looking at his political courage is how he acted when he returned from Vietnam. Now, a lot of people have said that John Kerry is someone who is extremely intelligent, who really has great moral fortitude and showed courage in Vietnam, but he showed just as much when he came back and the country was in chaos and virtual rebellion over the war. And really the question was, whose side are you on?
And
are
he decided,
you going to stand
he decided
up?
Very publicly.
And he decided very publicly to take a stand. He testified before the Congress of the United States, and he said, this is an outrage. The leaders of our country have brought us into a quagmire, and this is an outrageous policy, and we have to end it because American lives are being lost needlessly in
that,
a civil war.
But that didn't leave him alone. That didn't leave him without allies. There was a whole
massive
big segment of Americans
movement.
Who were ready
absolutely,
to embrace him.
Absolutely, absolutely. But he took a leadership role, and I think that that's what this is all about,
taking
a leadership role in terms of his moral character.
Let's roll the clock back then to 1971, and John Kerry has come home, very politically ambitious. People who served with him in Vietnam knew it. Even then, he took a video camera with him to film himself. And here's another flip-flop, by the way. In an interview with Bill Keller of the New York Times about a year or two ago, I remember being struck by a passage in which John Kerry said that these films that he had of himself in Vietnam would never be used in political ads. I remember distinctly those being used in his first Senate race in 84.
He's not the only guy who's ever taken a camera to war.
Right, but he may be the first to say, I would never use it for political reasons, having already done so. 1971, the famous episode with throwing away the medals. So this is from the Boston Globe.
And these are his Bronze Star and Silver Star, supposedly.
And there's a demonstration taking place.
Outside the
White House. And decorated Vietnam vets are throwing their medals over a fence onto the steps of the Capitol as a sign of their contempt for the administration's policies. My colleague Tom Oliphant, then a news reporter, writes, John Kerry of Waltham said before he threw his medals over the fence, quote, I'm not doing this for any violent reasons, but to try to make this country wake up once and for all. That's the Boston Globe, April 1971. Back then, he recognized that being seen as anti-war was clearly in his political interest, and that quote reflects it. 1984, he's running for the United States Senate. There's a big veterans vote. He realizes that in order to upgrade his old image, he needs to do something about that. And this is what the newspaper reports then. Kerry, after showing a reporter his medals and ribbons on display in his Back Bay apartment, said he had disagreed with other protest leaders on throwing away medals.
In other words,
that was in addition to the
those
part
weren't
of
his medals. It turns out he still had them in 1984.
Right.
I mean,
they were his campaign ribbons.
But no, he says he threw away somebody else's medals, a veteran from Lexington, I think it was, who couldn't get to Washington. But it's the business about saying in 84 he had disagreed on throwing away medals, saying in 71 why it was important to be seen throwing away medals.
Okay, Jack Beatty, take us in here then to this man's character. It's going to be on trial, as George Bush's will no doubt be as well. In the flip-flop charge, how much positioning and framing and frame up is there, and how much is a real issue to be considered by American voters about John Kerry?
Well, on the one hand, it's hard to accuse a person flip-flopping whose lifelong record from the AFL-CIO COPE is 91%.
That is, the labor camp says he's solid for us.
He's 100% on abortion rights. He's ranked 90-something percent from the Americans for Democratic Action, a liberal group. He is ranked in the 90s by the environmental groups. This is the portrait of not only a consistent liberal, a predictable liberal. So that's the one thing. Those are objective measures of his whole career, his whole voting right.
I don't know what kind of response that'll be to the Bush White House. Say, hey, we're not a flip-flopper. We're a flat-out liberal.
The same Ed Gillespie actually got off a line a couple of weeks ago when he said that John Kerry has a more liberal record even than Ted Kennedy.
Yeah, but it's funny. They've walked away from that already and really gone to the flip-flop.
But you can't have it both ways. If he's liberal, he can't be a flip-flopper. But on the other side, Kerry has a penchant, and this is what I think will hurt him. It isn't just these votes, it's the way he acts. He has a penchant for what I call verbal conjunctivitis.
Ooh.
He can't begin a sentence that doesn't make its way to a but. He gets to that conjunction, and it's but. And this, he's forever nuancing his own positions even as he's giving them. And there was a really flagrant example in the debate before Wisconsin, which hurt him in Wisconsin. He was asked, do you feel responsible for what's happening in Iraq? Are you responsible for this? You voted for it. He went off into an area of, you know, on the one hand, on the other hand, the seven different positions he has on the war. And at the end of it, John Edwards said, That, John, that's the longest answer I've ever heard to a yes or no. And John Edwards said,
to a yes or no question.
John Edwards said, yes, I feel responsible. My vote sent them there.
Simple, straightforward. The courtroom speaker's clarity.
Wow, and George Bush is going to talk the very same way.
Elizabeth Sherman, how about it? He's up against George Bush. Say what you like about George Bush. He's a paragon of simplicity in expression. Whether you think it's too simple, whether you think the ideas are too reduced, too reductive, well, okay, some do, some don't. But he doesn't get nicked for nuance.
Absolutely he doesn't get nicked for nuance. I mean, this is a man who sees the entire world and every single issue in it in black and white.
So what plays better? There's a big race coming up here.
I think that this administration is totally underestimating the intelligence of the American people. Hmm. We now have a president who doesn't bother to read the morning papers.
So he said.
He has someone come in and say, well, tell me what happened today. And he's already got an opinion on it, even though it might be his best guess, or maybe it has to do with his religious beliefs or his moral concerns. These are snap judgments about very complex issues. What I will give Senator Kerry for some credit for is that, as we said a minute ago, he has been a consistent voice. He's been a fierce defender
that is for labor, for abortion
women,
rights,
of women's
liberal
rights,
causes.
For example, across the board. I feel that you could always count on John Kerry to be a strong Democrat and, yes, a liberal. When we were talking about issues that had to do with a woman's right to choose, I mean, I think he's always been there. The other thing is that he is a lawyer. He's somebody who understands the law, understands the complexity of legislation, and I think his intelligence has really served him well, so that he has been able to see the complexity of any issue. And in a very complex world, I think we need somebody who does more than have a knee-jerk response to every single issue on the table.
And yet the hit keeps coming up. The Dean campaign said before Howard Dean dropped out, one of their top spokesmen said Kerry's got a voting record that's a big vulnerability. He's all over the place. Todd Purdom with the New York Times reporting on how Democrats feel about John Kerry. And he describes Democrats on Capitol Hill having accused him of being too eager to be in the majority, too quick to position his vote for political advantage. We have a lot of callers who want to join this conversation. Let's turn to them. Michael's calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Michael. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking me.
Sure.
Actually, your speakers have already covered some of my basic points. I'd like to just emphasize John Kerry has 100% legal conservation voters record for his 18 years in the Senate.
So on the environment, no flip-flopping in your eyes or theirs?
None whatsoever. And then look at George Bush. He runs in 2000 on a pledge to regulate carbon dioxide, which is polluting the planet and causing global warming, and it's going to be devastating for our children and grandchildren and really disrupt the global climate. And what does he do? He turns around, he reneges on it, and then shortly after, Christy Todd Whitman, you know, is sent packing. I can't see that. If George Bush has a consistency, it's supporting oil, nuclear, coal, and which gets us into foreign wars and things like that. So if you want a foolish consistency, go with George Bush, a black and white foolish consistency.
And you'll have none of it. Jeff Jacoby?
And yet, you know, even on issues like that, John Kerry goes around. Now, one of his attack points on the Bush administration is that it pulled the United States out of the Kyoto Accord, the one on global warming, never mentioning that it was 97 or 98, he was part of that unanimous Senate vote that said that the United States should not be a signatory to the Kyoto Pact as it was then written. I think, you know, you're going to see him over and over again. One I came across just today, today's Jerusalem Post, John Kerry gave a speech in which he said that, talking about Israel's security fence. Mm. Israel's security fence is a legitimate act of self-defense. Israel has a right and a duty to defend its citizens. Just a few months ago, he spoke to a group of Arab Americans. We don't need another barrier to peace. Provocative and counterproductive measures only harm Israel's security. That, too, shows a larger context to this. It isn't just the flip-flopping. It's trying to be all things to all people, talking to Group A and doing your best to sound as though you are right with Group A on their priorities, talking to Group B and doing exactly the same thing. To a certain extent, many politicians
sure,
do that.
Sure, it's worked for a lot of people.
But John Kerry takes it to a degree that I've never seen in anybody else in American history, well, in current political history.
Let's hear more from our callers. And, Michael, thank you for your call. James is calling from Boston. Hi, James. You're on the air.
Hi, good evening. Thanks
good evening.
For taking my call.
Sure.
I, as a constituent of John Kerry's for the last 10 years, I share Jeff Jacoby's concerns about his flip-flopping record, especially in the lead-up to the Iraq War. I feel like I was monitoring his votes where he was standing very carefully. I called his office several times. I emailed him several times trying to understand his position. I felt like he's been positioning himself for this run for the presidency for years and years and years.
Is that a crime?
No, it's not. I don't think it's a crime, but I think it makes him ingenuine. I think I agree that he's trying to be all things to all people.
Have you been a Kerry voter, a Kerry supporter, or just a constituent in his state?
I voted for him in his last Senate race, but in the upcoming Massachusetts primary, I'm not going to be voting for John Kerry.
And if it's Kerry Bush, despite your misgivings, where do you end up, James?
I'll absolutely vote for John Kerry if he's the only candidate in the race. I'm strongly opposed to Bush's policies. The woman from Harvard, I share all of her criticisms of President Bush 100-fold. But I also share Jeff Jacoby's concerns about his record. His record is a huge vulnerability, and if he's going to win the race, he needs to rectify it, and he needs to address his nuanced positions, as he calls them, in a very...
How do you rectify a 19-year record? I mean, it's there.
It's a good question. I don't know. I wish he'd had a different record. I wish he'd used his courageousness in a way that he would stand up for what he believed in. But I don't know how you rectify it aside from saying, you know,
I'm a complex guy, and that he does. James, thanks very much for your call. Elizabeth Sherman, let me go to you on this war issue.
Yeah.
Because people really watch John Kerry on that, and still, it takes a while to understand his position. Again and again on the campaign trail, he's asked about it, especially when he was up against Howard Dean. Mm-hmm. You gave the green light to this. Why did you do that? What's the answer?
Well, I think that vote almost sank his candidacy. I mean, as soon as that vote took place, the Democrats deserted him in droves. And the person who was sending out the clarion call, who was really carrying the banner and saying, this is a complete and total outrage. We are going up against this tin pot dictator who's got an army on the run and claiming that, you know, he's the most vicious, heinous enemy, you know, since the Soviet Union at its peak.
But Kerry gave the vote.
Outrage.
He gave the vote that Bush wanted.
Absolutely. And the Democrats deserted him. And I think what's happened is that he has really stood back. He's really learned that, in fact, that was a wrong vote. I think in retrospect, he realizes that he made a terrible mistake. But I think the
reason
why...
Is that a flip-flop? Is that pandering?
No,
is that example A then?
Because the fact of the matter is... that if you, Tom, or I were in the seat of the United States Senate and someone came and said, you know what, Americans are going to die because this guy has got weapons of mass destruction, and before you know it, he's going to be blowing up your radio station, you would certainly say, well, you know, we've got to get rid of him. It's a terrible thing. We don't want to do it, but maybe we made a mistake, and maybe we have allowed this man to be completely armed, even though the United States was complicit in the fact that the man had weapons of mass destruction.
Elizabeth Sherman's got here. What do you make of the war vote?
I think it was the worst vote of his career.
So?
And,
Exhibit A, then?
Well, look at this. He and several other people wanted to run for president in 1992. They didn't do it. And the reason was they were wrong on that war. He was against that war. It was popular. It was over. He couldn't run. Sam Nunn was in the same position.
Mm-hmm.
There were others. Al Gore did vote for the war.
So is this the very opportunism that people are pointing at?
So look at that case. Look at that case, 1991. An invasion of another country. Worldwide coalition for the war. Arab governments sending troops. On and on. The worldwide indignation. He's against that one. This one, no Arab governments, no worldwide condemnation, no provocation, a preemptive war, the first in our history, on and on and on. If that wasn't a political vote, then I don't know what a political vote is.
So, John Kerry, flip-flopper?
A man who wants to be president.
Yeah, and a lot has been done on that trail. We're talking tonight about Senator John Kerry and the flip-flop charge. My guests are Elizabeth Sherman, Jeff Jacoby, and our own Jack Beatty. You can join the conversation. Is the GOP on to something here? Will it hurt Kerry? Is perfect consistency the mark of a great leader? Is there a minimum? We're 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Democratic presidential frontrunner John Kerry and the flip-flop charge made this week by President Bush and by Republican National Committee Chair Ed Gillespie. My guest tonight, Jeff Jacoby with the Boston Globe, Elizabeth Sherman, a research fellow at the Center for Public Leadership at Harvard University. Our own Jack Beatty is in the studio, and you can join us as well. Is John Kerry a flip-flopper? Is the electorate patient enough for Kerry's nuanced explanations? Do the nuanced explanations add up? And what about it? Is this Hamlet versus Bonanza's Little Joe this year? What do you think? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Ed is calling from Taunton, Massachusetts. Ed, you're on the air.
Yes, thanks. From what I've heard tonight, it sounds like John Kerry is a Democrat who's on the fringe of a lot of issues, which I don't think is so much a problem if we can look at his voting record and determine from that why he made the decisions he did. One possible explanation, I'd like your guests to comment, is that could he perhaps have voted his conscience on issues on the subtleties of some of the legislation?
Well, he's on the fringe once in a while, Ed, but he's often right down the straight and narrow on abortion rights, on the environment, on labor, on core Democratic issues. Are you saying you're willing to cut him some slack once in a while if he sees a nuance that others don't?
I am if it's particularly, as legislation often does, if it contains riders that seem too extreme. And that happens quite frequently, if I understand, that at the last minute or even ahead of time, Republicans may have slipped in a rider onto a bill that just doesn't suit the original bill as it was written. I mean, does that sort of thing happen?
Got it.
And can it be explained by the voting record?
Ed, we've got it. Jack, I want to come first to you on this. What about it? John Kerry, the thoughtful legislator who won't be bullied by the party leaders every single time, who's going to really look through, and if he sees some sticking point or some problem out there, he'll vote the other way, even if it makes him, or he'll even turn around later if it doesn't go his way. Is that a fair characterization of Kerry?
Well, again, I mean, it's in terms of these 90% ratings, the guy is you can almost predict where he's going to vote on anything. He's a liberal.
True.
He's going to come down on that
on
side.
On the other hand, look at these big issues that the Republicans are already bringing up.
You know,
No Child Left Behind, Patriot Act,
the war. Talk about the Patriot Act. If you got Dick Armey on this show, in fact, we've had him on the show, the Republican caucus is about half divided on this Patriot
Act. But Kerry voted for it.
Of course, so did they. But they're thinking, wait a minute, did we go too far? So is he. No Child Left Behind? Talk to the Utah legislature. They're saying, wait a minute, we like this at first, but you're not funding it. John Kerry's position is the same as that, and it's the same as Ted Kennedy's position. Ted Kennedy was the co-author of the bill. Ted Kennedy was with George Bush at the signing ceremony. If you're not having second thoughts about No Child Left Behind,
you're not thinking.
And that's what the co-sponsor of the bill, Mr. Education, Ted Kennedy, is saying. Tom Harkin. They're all saying, why did we do this? Why didn't we make – it's underfunded by $26 billion over 3 years. This is a good bill?
Jeff Jacoby, so you're laying it on Kerry and not the GOP guys who are also having second thoughts?
I think Ed makes a perfectly reasonable point when he says, look, it's okay for a public official to change his mind about something after having thought it through or to see nuances that he didn't realize before. Kerry almost never explains his flip-flops and straddles in those terms. He doesn't say it the way you, Jack, just did. He doesn't say, I did vote for it. I thought it was a good idea, but I've had this second thought and that second thought. No, he opposes it now because he's turned it into an attack point against George W. Bush. You know, we were talking about the various war votes. Go back to that 1991 vote. He votes against going into the war. He sends a letter to a constituent who lives in Newton at the time.
Newton,
Massachusetts, explaining that he's opposed to the war resolution because he wants to give sanctions more time to work. 9 days later, through some kind of mix-up in the office, he sends this exact same constituent a letter saying, I have always supported President Bush's response to Saddam Hussein's aggression. Somehow this gets leaked to a reporter, shows up in a newspaper. Then comes a third letter saying that what my real position is to oppose the war but to support the troops. Never does he say, I said X, I was wrong to have said it. Always trying to squirm his way into being in the right, no matter how many times he concludes that he was really in the wrong.
Elizabeth Sherman, how about the characterization? A trimmer. Working the angles here.
No, I think that John Kerry is a politician. Now, what does that really mean? I think it really means that you have a very diverse constituency. You have people who are in business. You have people who are in labor. You have people who are concerned about the environment. You have people who are concerned about jobs.
You tell them each a different thing?
I mean, No, you don't tell them each a different thing. But what you do is that when the bill comes down, and I think the United States has a very complex governmental legislative process, I think when the bill comes down, you have to weigh all sides of it. And everybody in the Senate practically said, on this Medicare bill, for example, this is not a good bill. You know, the drug companies are really going to make out like bandits. But we are going to get a drug benefit for some seniors, not all seniors. The best that we can do right now in this Medicare bill is this. Let's look at the Patriot Act. This was a time of tremendous fear, chaos, and confusion. Mm. You get this multi-page, I don't know how many pages, but it was a huge bill. Now, do they realize that when they sign on with this bill, almost a unanimous bill, as you said a moment ago, except for Senator Feingold, do they realize that John Ashcroft is going to use this bludgeon, this heavy-handed tool, so that at Drake University, where there is a big conference about the legitimacy of the Iraq War and the mistakes of the Iraq War, that actually the Justice Department is going to come in and ask for the records, the minutes, all the people, all the background on all these people, all these students, whether they were there, did you attend this conference? Mm. This is having a chilling effect on the right to assemble, on the right to dissent in this country.
Elizabeth, so
everybody can see, everybody can see that there are flaws in the Patriot Act. We all know that, and it has to be fixed.
All those kinds of questions were raised even when it was passed. That's why they built a 5-year sunset provision into it. But what does it mean to you, Elizabeth, when John Kerry goes before an Israeli group and says the fence that you're building is a reasonable measure against terrorism and you're entitled to defend yourselves, and goes before an Arab group and says it's a barrier to peace and counterproductive and provocative? He's always trying to tell every group what it is they want to hear.
First of all, the Israeli government has dissembled itself on the topic of that wall. I think that
the wall.
But I'm not asking about the merits of that issue.
No,
I'm asking what it says about John Kerry, that he can't be straight on so many issues.
It's not that he can't be straight. I think that in life, in legislation, and on policy issues, an idea sometimes seems to be quite reasonable.
But
no, wait a minute. This goes to the question of the wall that is being built now in Israel. And this is an issue that is now before the Hague Court. And this is an issue that a lot of people thought, well, okay, this makes sense. Yes, there are terrorist bombings in Israel. You know, what are we going to do about it? Okay, you know, build a strong wall to keep them out. But now we know the way that this wall is being constructed in order to retain the 400 settlements in the West Bank means that it's going to completely destroy
Kerry isn't giving a position that's evolved. He's just changed his mind based on the audience that
it's
he's addressing.
Once you look at the reality on the ground, it's like Boston City Hall, Jeff, if you've ever seen that architectural monstrosity. I'm sure that it looked good on the drawing board. But once the thing is actually built, it's a horror.
So there it is. Tough to call, Jack. I mean, there are arguments on both sides of that wall, that fence. John Kerry, if Jeff Jacoby's got the quotes right, on both sides of that fence, and that can hurt. Let's get to this. I'm sorry we can't get to more of our callers, but what I really want to talk, as this goes ahead, as Super Tuesday is coming up, if John Kerry rolls on that day and the Democratic primaries are essentially decided, if it is Kerry, now we've got the matchup, Kerry and Bush. How does this, I want to hear from each of you, how this plays out. Jack, first to you. How's it work? George Bush, Mr. Straight Ahead, never changes, at least that's the reputation, going up against the more nuanced Kerry. How's it play politically?
Well, I think Bush is going to say this is what a leader does. He decides. You can't have yes, no, and maybe. It's got to be one or the other. I'm on one side of this, and I've been there, and that's that. And Kerry is going to be saying, Mr. Bush, and he's been hinting this, you're dumb. He's been saying that, you know, pretty regularly.
Essentially.
Yeah. You just don't think about anything. And we got to have a president who fights this war on terror smartly.
Jeff Jacoby, how's it play out?
I've been saying for 2 years that the election is going to be decided by the way the war is going. And everything that we're talking about here, you know, interesting and scintillating though it may be, when it comes to a couple of weeks before the vote in November, look at Iraq and how it's working. If it is working, Bush wins. If it has fallen apart, Bush loses. I think all of this is going to play only on the margins, not go to the core of the race.
Elizabeth Sherman, John Kerry and the flip-flop charge, does it play? How's it play out when these guys are head-to-head?
I think it's an incredibly weak read on which the Republicans Republicans are trying to hang this campaign, and it's not going to play at all. I completely agree with Jeff. It's going to be a referendum on the performance and the capability of George Bush. Has he functioned well as a good steward of the economy and commander-in-chief? And I think that Kerry's experience, his courage, and his intelligence, most of all, is really going to win the day.
Well, it's going to be a wild thing to watch, and we'll enjoy it. Hope we can watch it with all of you. Elizabeth Sherman, thanks for being with us tonight.
You're welcome.
Elizabeth Sherman, research fellow at the Center for Public Leadership at Harvard University. Jeff Jacoby, great to have you back.
My pleasure, Tom. Thank you.
Jeff Jacoby, Boston Globe columnist. And Jack Beatty, I'm left wondering, does John Kerry evolve in the heat, in this cauldron? Can he set the frame, the terms himself, in a way to pull it right away from this issue?
He's going to try, and he's been hitting back at what he calls Bush's flip-flops, and he's going to keep playing the Vietnam card. Look, when it really counted, I showed courage.
That profile.
That's my metaphor right there.
Right.
You know, Jack, don't think about these votes.
You got it. Jack, stand by. Listeners, you can continue this conversation at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. In a moment, Alan Greenspan calls for cuts in Social Security benefits. This is On Point. Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan today warned that cuts in Social Security and Medicare benefits will be necessary to deal with the huge federal budget deficit and the looming retirement of the baby boom generation. The suggested cuts should not affect current retirees, Greenspan said, but future retirees will need to have reduced benefits. The Fed chairman's comments were immediately assailed by Democrats. Senator John Kerry, the Democratic frontrunner, said during a campaign stop in Ohio, "If I'm president, we're simply not going to do it." Here's an excerpt of Alan Greenspan's testimony.
Most experts believe that the best baseline for planning purposes is to assume that the demographic shift associated with retirement of the baby boom generation will be permanent. That is, it will not reverse when that cohort passes away. Indeed, so long as longevity continues to increase, and assuming no significant changes in immigration or fertility rates, the proportion of elderly in the population will only rise. If this fundamental change in the age distribution materializes, we will eventually have no choice but to make significant structural adjustments in the major retirement programs. In view of these considerations, I believe that a thorough review of our spending commitments and at least some adjustments in those commitments is necessary for prudent policy. I also believe that we have an obligation to those in or near retirement to honor what has been promised to them. If changes need to be made, they should be made soon enough so that future retirees have time to adjust their plans for retirement spending and to make sure that their personal resources, along with what they expect to receive from the government, will be sufficient to meet their retirement needs. I certainly agree that the same scrutiny needs to be applied to taxes. However, tax rate increases of sufficient dimension to deal with our looming fiscal problems arguably pose significant risks to economic growth and the revenue base. The exact magnitude of such risks is very difficult to estimate, but they are of enough concern, in my judgment, to warrant aiming to close the fiscal gap primarily, if not wholly, from the outlay side.
Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan testifying before the House Budget Committee earlier today. Jack Beatty, we've just got a minute, but this sounds like the boom dropping.
Yes, indeed. And, Paul O'Neill's memoir just came out. And in that memoir, Paul O'Neill is talking to Alan Greenspan, and they're trying to get Bush to adopt a trigger amendment on these tax cuts in 2001, saying that if we start to run a deficit, we're going to rescind the tax cuts. He seems to have forgotten all about that.
Well,
now that
didn't
we're running
happen,
a $550 billion deficit.
Yes, $550 billion. But Greenspan's saying you can't raise taxes enough to cover the hole that we've now got here.
Well, there's no doubt about it. But for him to say that the answer is to put the age up of Social Security and reduce benefits and not to say anything about ending this the tax cuts to, say, Bill Gates' heirs, this strikes me as, Mr. Greenspan's reputation has really been on the decline since his letting the bubble go up. And he continues, it seems to me, on the basis of this testimony versus what O'Neill has him saying in 2001, to be saying, well, any tax cut is okay.
But what about George Bush? This used to be the third rail. Now Greenspan's saying we're going to have to cut benefits, folks. Is this deadly for George Bush or not?
I don't think so. George Bush can say, I don't want to do that. And he doesn't. George Bush has never said anything like that. He wants to privatize. He doesn't want to cut benefits.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will have it all. But Alan Greenspan doesn't think so. Jack, thanks a lot for being with us tonight. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.